Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
Why does diversity matter? Let's go in-depth with Mark Putnam, president of Central College, Pella. Well, Mark, I get the impression from your writings that diversity is very important at Central College and for you.
It is, and I think much of that has to do with how we see our philosophy of education. When we think about what it means to be an educated person in society today, we have to acknowledge the fact that the world is changing dramatically. And that is manifested in many different ways. Diversity in all its forms ranges from racial and ethnic questions to linguistic questions to questions of those who are impaired in various ways. And so how we see people who are different than what might be normative becomes an important part of how we understand our own learning. And I had that experience at various points in my life. I remember being in graduate school and encountering very different people than I knew growing up, and even going through college. I was in the middle of New York City, and encountering people who just ordered the world differently, who spoke in different forms, a different cadence, a different emphasis, with different filters, was profoundly important to me educationally. And so now when we look at students who are coming up through the ranks these days, we find it to be exceedingly important that they understand the complexity and diversity of thought and idea and of interpretation, because that will inform so much of their future success wherever they go. It may be in the business world, and many manufacturers, employers, corporations of all kinds are saying that they need people who can understand human difference and diversity. And as a result, they want to make sure that these people that they're bringing into their organizations have an awareness and can address it with clarity and strong purpose and intent.
Well, but what you just listed, all those different dimensions of diversity, those kinds of differences are really hard to negotiate, aren't they?
Oh, they are. And we all come with various forms of bias in our own backgrounds and the perspectives we bring. It sometimes is in very subtle forms. It can be regional. We could have nothing to do with human difference except people from different regions of the country perceive people that are not from their area to be different in some way. And they draw stereotypes in or conclusions in about what value systems are like, whether you're from the West Coast or the South or the Midwest or the Northeast. And I think it's the same underlying process. It is this notion of the other, of defining the other. And sometimes we define ourselves by virtue of what we see in others that we like or don't like, or we can't understand or can't fully understand at a level of experience. We can understand intellectually. We don't know what it's like to be that person or from that area. And so the kinds of filters we use form areas that we have to find ways to overcome and hear each other differently and see each other differently and embrace the kind of diversities that exist through all of humanity.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about diversity with Mark Putnam, president of Central College. It's got to be hard for some people because we're taught that our way of doing things is better than any other place on the face of the earth. Aren't we taught that? Don't we hear that every day? And if we even question that, if we say, well, you know, maybe there are other ways to do things. Maybe other people do have better ideas. If we say that, that could be construed to be unpatriotic or, you know, anti everything that America stands for. How do we stand up and to that, or do we?
Well, I think we forget our own history when we get there, because this is a nation of immigrants. We say that and we think of it intellectually. We report it rhetorically. But to be a nation of immigrants is to be understanding of the fact that people came with vastly different views of the world. I come from a denominational affiliation that people in this region probably have not heard much of, but I was raised in a church called the Christian and Missionary Alliance. Now, this is an organization that grew out of the Holiness Movement, but it was founded by a guy named Albert Benjamin Simpson in New York City, is where it began. And he was a very, very well-known, very well-established minister of a Presbyterian church in New York, the 13th Street Presbyterian Church. Right around that area was Little Italy, the Irish neighborhoods that were beginning in the late 19th century, and that's when he was pastoring the church. And the challenge for him was that he would do a lot of street ministry, even though it was a very prestigious pulpit. He was on the streets a lot, and he approached his board in the late 1870s, early 1880s, for a desire to try to reach out to the people in the neighborhoods and bring them into the church. They flatly refused. So what he did was he eventually left that ministry and formed organizations that would minister to people in the streets of New York. And then he never intended it for it to become really a church or a denomination at that level, but it did. So the point of the story is that we can understand American history from a lens that thinks it just sort of started a few years ago, that we don't have a sense of the depth of change over time. But there is an awful lot of American history that was about managing human difference and diversity and finding ways to engage people. In some ways, there was broader assimilation culturally. In some ways, we've maintained distinctiveness. But it's been the part of every generation to undertake that. Probably now it's more complex than it has ever been. We are much more connected by communication. We have a lot more images in the popular culture. So it's not as easy, perhaps, to think about my neighbor because I know this person who's next to me. I know this person who just immigrated who really doesn't know the language, but I can connect to that individual and have the broader media culture, the broader communications culture that surrounds us, pumping into us these views and stereotypes or challenging them. And all of that mix, I think, is the great challenge that we face now of how do we understand as Americans what it means to be a nation of immigrants.
Well, I don't know if we've ever understood thoughtfully about it. I mean, we can talk about how assimilation occurred and how everything, we finally reached a certain point where different groups were welcomed and recognized, but I'm old enough to remember what a lot of, I don't know, comments about, oh, let's just say John Kennedy's Catholicism. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were a lot. Now no one mm-hmm. would see that as an issue for somebody running for president. But in 1960, that was a huge deal. And the Irish were held in certain regards that they are not held in today. Irish people are not problematized or put into categories like they were, mm-hmm. 50, 100 years ago. Yeah. And for many ethnic groups, that's the same.
Oh, clearly true. And I can look back at my own family history, and I can see that the same roots from most people who are now deceased, who were, their grandparents or aunts or uncles, who would speak about Catholicism, in the same ways that you're describing. What I do think is that the shared experience we have is what begins to change it. And that's the role that we see in education particularly, but it extends to other kinds of civic organizations or being civically engaged more broadly, because interaction creates likability. Likability creates trust. And when you're in that framework, it stops being the other. It starts being, I know this person and his or her values or framework or challenges or the issues they're confronting. And now I begin to create understanding because of the nature of interaction. So it is that human contact that matters, and that's why, from an educational standpoint, creating educational experiences that force people together is so critically important. It's why we seek to get students all over the world from Central College through international programs, and increasingly want to bring students here from other parts of the world, because those connecting points make the difference in saying, I can understand what we share and what we have in common and what we aspire to together, while I can also understand why your culture, history, language, and tradition has been formed the way it's been formed. And I can respect and honor that. And I think that's what begins to change society.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about diversity with Mark Putnam, president of Central College. What do you say to the parent or the alumni that says, by this exposure, by this interaction, you're undermining our traditional values?
There would be a few, I think, relatively small in number these days, that would bring forward that kind of concern or even criticism. And what I would say on a practical level is the world is diversifying. You can travel to any major city, and you could have a notion in your mind about what London is these days. Well, there are major sections of London that have strong Islamic influences, that have some of the best Indian restaurants you could find would be in places like London. And so that the richness of culture and history in a lot of our major cities is manifested because of what migration has brought to us. So the stereotypical view of a world-class city or a region that is developing begins to dispel the fact that these can be people held in isolation or ideas held in isolation. They're all now interacting. And so the pure practicality of it is that unless we understand the complexities and diversities of human life, we will not be effective citizens locally, regionally, nationally, or globally, because that's going to be required of every person to understand and be able to relate to. Now, the question comes in a phrase that Parker Palmer has used, who's a wonderful author and thinker about spirituality and education, where he says, what you believe that's different than what I believe has consequences for me. And that's where the rubber meets the road on this issue, because people who hold beliefs, and in fact, if they hold them strongly or assertively, creates an opposition force, that you believe this, I don't believe that, and therefore there's a consequence. The issue is, can I accept someone personally in a way that doesn't necessarily adhere to everything they suggest they would believe in, but to accept them or embrace them as people? And the reality is, that's what the business world is pressing toward. That's what, more broadly, the church is pressing toward. We see that in municipal and statewide interests, to say that being able to hold together the pluralism that is so deeply a part of American culture now will be essential to our future success. If we believe educationally, if we believe in terms of business interests and commerce, that we can operate in ways that cordon us off, kind of like a giant gated community, then we're not being realistic to the realities of what the world is bringing to us. We can ignore that, but we ignore it at our peril.
Well, it must be difficult to pull some of this off in rural parts of America where like where I grew up, everybody looked like me, everybody talked like me, everybody said crick rather than creek. And then you go, so we all shared all of these common things.
Yeah.
And we still do today. How do we get across that divide, or do we?
Yeah, I think we talk about the commonalities that do in fact reinforce connection. You can find that at the simplest level in family cultures. You know, many families have their own languages, and there are words and phrases that are informed by all kinds of histories and interactions that have been a part of it. And so it's an in-group that forms. And you can have a community that's an in-group, or a region that has more in-group quality. What I think can happen here is a willingness to simply listen, hear, and see, and not operate out of a place of fear, but operate out of a place of interest or curiosity, to seek to understand. You may or may not, with anyone, fully embrace all perspectives on life or value systems or other things that might attend it. But opening up to that is the possibility of creating a successful society in the long run. So I think there are some who want the gated community experience. They seem to want our people, our groups, in places that are familiar, that can perpetuate, and the quote is often, our way of life. The problem is that I think history teaches us that groups that sought to create their way of life ended up being marginalized by society, and in some respects ostracized, because the motion of society is naturally going to be integrating and aligning and assimilating and creating cross-cultural connections of all kinds. So I think what you can say in places like this is it is in the interest of the communities that are part of this to begin, even in small ways, to find open connections to people, to learn more, to see more, to understand, and to begin to touch other people. And in so doing, gradually, interaction creates likability. Likability creates trust. And I think we see a lot of that in society today.
Isn't all of this about power? Let's go back to my little example about crick. I love the word crick. I use it. In fact, I've done and I've got criticism about it, but that's what I grew up saying. Mm-hmm. But it's all about power. Crick is actually, as far as I can tell, the oldest version, and creek is derivative. And so actually crick is correct. Mm-hmm. Creek is derivative, but it's seen as this hierarchical kind of thing where somebody, whoever is doing the correcting, is the one that asserts the power. And so in all of this that we're talking about, isn't this a kind of a power struggle in society? And do we give? Do we yield? Can we count on the other person to yield and understand our perspective, my pronunciation, for example?
Yeah, and I think there is a power aspect to it about what survives. We talk about the dominant forces in culture, that there are certain things that begin to overtake what may have been normative at one time, and it becomes something else. So the question is, would we create a circumstance in a power relationship where we say it's unacceptable to say crick? You could overwhelm that. You could by legislation. You could by fiat. You could by social pressure, acceptance. Say all those who say crick are not acceptable to the dominant culture and what is normative. Another way of doing that is to say, isn't it interesting where crick came from? And it isn't interesting that we learn something about our own linguistic history. And those who want to say crick, they're part of us.
It's okay for me to do that.
It's okay. And I remind people sometimes, about my own last name, Putnam. Okay, it's an Anglo-Saxon term. It goes way back. And its origin is actually Puttenham. And putta was hawk, and ham was farm. So literally it meant a farm where there are hawks. And that was the people were attached to the place, in a sense. And then over time, it just was truncated and shortened, and it became Putnam. I remember that because the origins of the name and the family that would have come from it from very ancient time informs who I am today at some level. So I never want to lose my Puttenham as part of who I am, just like you don't want to lose your crick.
Right.
But what it can do is to say, I care more about knowing the origin. I care more about understanding it and articulating it and in some ways celebrating it. So that even though it's now Putnam, not Puttenham, I have the connection to those roots. And you may slip one day and find yourself saying creek.
I do.
And then, or you're in a certain company, and you decide, well, I'm going to use this other term because they won't know what crick means. Mm-hmm. Well, now these are cultural adaptations and their sensitivities. And it's really saying it doesn't have to be crick. It can be creek. It's still the same thing. But when we draw hard lines around it, that's when it becomes a much more difficult thing. And power, as you put it, becomes a fear-based response. I'm afraid of losing what I believe to be right versus someone who's afraid of losing what they have always been hanging on to.
And so it's central. If you stand in isolation with the only knowledge of where you have been, we all lose, and not just at central, but everywhere.
Everywhere, that's right. And because the richness is to know the origins of things, and that there's a lot of common language, a lot of common history, a saga that is about a people. And to understand that places things in context, because we all reflect in ways that are important parts of our own past. And we don't know why we do things. We're programmed in some respects to do things. And I think that's the important thing, is that we can help people explore and begin to learn. Many students today don't know a lot of origins about where things came from that inform the way they do things. And so to the extent that we can open that up, understanding of self suddenly creates understanding of the other and therefore understanding of the world.
Thanks to Mark Putnam for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.